Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Chittletow from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics in Healthcare Compliance Association. I am joined today by Steve Priest. Steve is the president of Integrity Insight International and a longtime fixture in the business ethics world. I think when I first got involved, 17 years ago, you were already well on the scene and somebody everyone said I needed to talk to. So thanks for talking to me then and thanks for talking to everyone now.
Adam, it's a delight to be with you again, and it has been a long time. But we still have some wisdom, right?
We still, at least I hope so. So what we thought we would do today for this podcast, and rather than address like one specific topic, is have a more freeform conversation. And I suggested to Steve the odd concept of, let's talk about what's bothering you. And I don't mean in personal life or the fact that we're sitting here in Los Angeles and he has to go back to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is having a blizzard right now. But in the space of ethics and compliance, what are you seeing that you think is troubling?
I actually was really hoping we'd start with the personal because I'm not in the get off my lawn stage. But cell phones, man, cell phones by drivers, cell phones by pedestrians, cell phones at restaurants, they're making me crazy. And I wish we could have a society of cell phone compliance and ethics because it's a, maybe it's just me, but man,
well,
oh
no,
man.
No, but you're actually pointing to an issue that I think is, somebody just actually wrote about this on the blog, but I think is a real one, is that people talk too much about work in public places on cell phones. You know, the person wrote about the fact that they were sitting at like a Starbucks and there was a medical professional next to her just going through patient stuff over the phone.
Yikes.
And I do wonder at sort of the horrific waste of the amount of money organizations spend on data protection and security and privacy, and that people just will talk on the phone in public about most anything.
I was in a medium-sized city 2 weeks ago helping a company, Fortune 100, 200 company, with a risk and culture assessment. And I was in the lounge having a glass of wine at 7 o'clock or whatever. And there were three guys from this company who were treating the lounge as if it were a part of the office of the company across the street. And I learned so much, came back to haunt them, because the next morning when I'm meeting with my host, the ethics compliance team, I'm like, you should have heard this. And they got the details from me and, oh, their cybersecurity and corporate intelligence people were all over it. Memos went out, search went on. It was ridiculous.
It was a nightmare. But it's definitely a big issue. So,
but I will tell you what bugs me these days. And Adam, as you will recall from 17 years ago and currently, this is not a new it's not a new thing that bugs me. But I don't understand why we still don't understand human beings and adapt our ethics and compliance approaches to what we know about human psychology. And this goes, this is human psychological development, it's behavioral economics, and the consequences of not getting it, I believe, are really problematic for firms. And here's to make it more concrete. I will assert, and we both have teenagers, although I think your oldest might be in his
20s. He's crossed over.
He's crossed over. So I don't, my teenagers have crossed over also. But we treat our employees, for the most part, as if they were in a stage of moral development somewhere between age 7 and age 12. And yeah, but it's pathetic. How do you get someone between age 7 and 12 to do something? Here's the rule. Don't screw it up. I mean, don't run with scissors. Okay. Don't lie, cheat, and steal. Okay. And we do this with our employees, age 7 to 12. We treat them like that. We don't take into account that even at age 13, for a lot of kids even younger, it takes something a little bit more than don't do this. Here's the rule, don't do this. It takes a more pro-social approach. Why are we doing this? How is it good for you? How is it good for your colleagues? How is it good for, in the case of most of our your clients, customers, whoever it is that we're trying to serve, how's it good for society? I don't want to say there's some companies that do it okay, but we have so much of an anti approach, a don't approach, a 7 to 12 year old approach, and so little of a, you're a mature adult. I want to treat you like a mature adult. How would you approach this situation? What are the pros and cons of acting in this kind of way? It's just missing.
So I don't disagree at all. I mean, I'm a big proponent that people need to understand the human behavior parts more. I tell everyone that the best book I think ever written about compliance is Dan Ariely's book, The Honest Truth About Dishonesty.
Fantastic. And Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow as kind of the foundation for Ariely.
Right. Yeah. If you can finish it, which you're only the second person, including myself, and I'm not counting myself in that. I think it's a brilliant book, but it's very difficult to get to. But
all right. Ariely is more.
But is approachable. Yeah. But I mean, the question I get, it's hard convincing people in compliance to read them. And how do we get people to start reengineering their approach, you know, from training to policies and procedures?
I don't know, Adam. It's been frustrating me for so long. Here's one thing. Diversify compliance staffs and diversify the compliance approach, partly by diversifying the staff. So when we have a field that is largely made up of people with legal backgrounds and accounting auditing backgrounds, they approach, what is the thing? If all you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And these, as you know, I mean, these are fantastic people. The lawyers who go into this and the auditors who go into this, they're great. But the best of them also say, yeah, this is part of how I have been brought up, how I've been professionalized. And that's a very narrow approach. We need more English majors or anthropology majors, soft humanities and soft social sciences to incorporate the human side. It is. I was looking at some presentations I did in the 90s. In the 90s on this, and I was more into alliteration at the time, and I remember the 90s. We were still trying to persuade companies to put into place ethics and compliance programs, yeah, right. And to do that, you needed to get lawyers to endorse it, and the CEOs to endorse it, and a little bit of a budget, tiny part of the budget compared to all the other legal.
Yeah, still think, I don't know if you remember saying this line, but I'll never forget when you said that the compliance budget is a rounding error on the audit budget.
Yes, or the legal budget.
Right.
Both. But I had the three R's. It was what happens if you put into place an ethics and compliance program. It's about risk reduction and reputation reinforcement and results rising. And we spent a lot of time in the past 20 years on risk reduction. We could argue a long time about whether we actually have reduced risks, but we spent a lot of time on it. Reputation reinforcement, not much. Looking at the results, diddly squat. And if you want to drive results, what you need is engagement by employees. You look at the statistics of employees and how much they're engaged in the company's mission, how much they're engaged in the company's values, how much they really want to do extra for the company, pro-social behavior, the psychologists call it, less than 50%. If you really got ethics right, you'd be engaging the hearts and minds of those people. So not only would you be treating them like adults and reducing risks, but the pro-social behavior that every company, almost every company wants, would change dramatically.
So now I agree with you fundamentally, but let me throw something at you that
yes!
you were explaining that you're saying this made me think.
Well, I love talking with you.
Here's a thought. I mean, you talked about the fact that, you know, employees wanting to invest in the long-term reputation of the company and instill that, but we're increasingly in a all be gone, you'll be gone era.
Yeah.
You know, where corporate loyalty to the individual is a lot less than it was, and employees feel less of a relationship with the organization. And, you know, you see people leaving jobs at frequent, you know, at a churn rate that's unprecedented.
Yes.
How do we overcome that when socially people feel like I'm only here, I'm only renting this job for a while?
Yeah.
Versus I'm invested in it. How do you still try and convince them that while you're here, these are the values that we want, not just for us, but for you. And this is really what you're buying into for the length of time you're here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the lifelong commitment / contract social compact has been long gone. And I'm not arguing that it should be back. What I would argue is that even acting in their own self-interest, employees want to work for a company that is thriving, and they want to work for a company they believe in, and they want to work for a company where they don't think they're screwing the customer or screwing the community or stealing from shareholders. And so there's a win-win source of alignment there. So maybe it's a little harder when you're not saying we're in it for the next 25 years and we hope you are too. Because I would suspect if you are out applying for a job, trying to get a new job, and you work for a company under a cloud of scandal, I would suspect it's a little more challenging to get the new job than if you're working for a well-respected, thriving company.
Yeah. No, I don't doubt it. I mean, there's certainly a lot of jobs where, you know, somebody used to work with who was at Enron, and he was far away from anything. He was doing like data services, but he couldn't talk about his past without everyone's eyebrows raising.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a big...
At the least, it's a distraction.
Yes, at least it's something that's a speed bump and the first question at every interview and not the first question you want to
right.
be asked.
Right, but I bet he got good at answering it.
Yes, I'm sure. Better than Enron did at answering it. So we're running out of time.
What?
I know. Life goes by quickly, as do podcasts. Any last thoughts
yes,
you want to raise?
Yes, I do have one more thing. So one of these things where we get the psychology wrong is the fraud triangle. Why does the fraud triangle dominate the approach of much of our field? I understand it addresses fraud. When you think of the misconduct or even just the sheer stupidity of what people have done that have cost them their jobs and their companies millions and hundreds of millions of dollars, the percentage that's fraud is pretty darn small. So this is it's a wrong model for our field. We have to look at why people do stupid things, whether they're intentional or unintentional, that relate, that end up with having safety issues, environmental issues, customer issues, deception of all kinds. It's not just about stealing anymore. It's a brave new world, Adam.
It's a brave new world, and hopefully we'll continue to weather it. Well, Steve, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.